Nobody noticed this back around Barcelona, but Audi actually beat Ferrari at something, in that they got their engine upgrade into their car first. On Friday, June the 12th, the FIA published a document listing every power unit change for the Barcelona Grand Prix weekend, and buried within it was a line confirming that both Audi cars will be fitted with new internal combustion engines and turbochargers. And if you've been paying attention, that's been a bugbear for the team ever since the season began. But these were not replacement engines, folks. These were the upgraded engines. And understandably, nobody might have noticed, for starters, that, hey, Audi is not a team that gets engagement on YouTube, but also for the fact that this is round 7, or at least Spain was round 7, the first Spanish Grand Prix, and that would be around about the time where, given you only get 3 engines per car per year, you would put in the second one, or you would make a change of some description. So naturally, all of that got overlooked simply for the fact that, well, Ferrari and Mercedes were in the mix, and then Hamilton got that emotional win, and Antonelli's car broke down thanks to the battery conking out. All of that stuff gave so much more attention and discourse than Audi just changing an engine. But actually, that proved to be a very important twist, and they did it so fast nobody actually noticed until a breaking exposé came from Motorsport Italia, which actually went into detail about what went down on that day. They broke the story days before the next race in Austria, where Ferrari are expected to bring in their ADO upgrade, but they themselves are already trying to manage expectations. It could be anything from 7 brake horsepower to 15 brake horsepower faster. We don't know. But meanwhile, the team most of you probably stopped thinking about after Melbourne had the new engine bolted in already. One that might address some key issues they had experienced in testing in the early races, you know, how rubbish they are at starts and what have you. And I missed this too, let's be fair. But the official version of the story and the real version of the story are two very different things, and the real version concerns the efforts of Mattia Binotto coming to the fore, and what he was able to excel at over at Ferrari for many, many, many years, including during the Schumacher era. Now, many of you brand new F1 fans may not understand that Mattia Binotto didn't arrive in Formula 1 to become, naturally, the Ferrari team principal. As you may have witnessed if you've been around since 2019, he is a very unlikely fellow. You wouldn't expect him to be an absolutely swashbuckling or charismatic leader of the Scuderia. As you may have found out, Mattia is not a people person, he is an engine person. So let's explain what's actually gone down. And it's got something to do with the ADO again. Now don't worry, I'm not going to go into blindingly extreme detail because we all know what the ADO does by now. The slower you are behind the benchmark, which in this case is Red Bull, the more you get. As everybody who is a member of the Tifosi will know, Ferrari is expected to get 2 upgrades this year and 2 upgrades next year. But also, and many people forget, Audi get the same treatment as well. When first announced, it sounded fair, but as we all discovered due to Mercedes earning a patch as well, the ADO only covers the combustion side, not the electric side. You know, half of the power unit, and nor does it cover the energy recovery system or the deployment strategy that decides when you boost and when you harvest. The FIA had explained the broad ingredients such as engine speed, torque, MGUK power and lap time sensitivity, but it has not published the full ranking data teams would need to audit the result from the outside. In short, there is enough going around right now to very much bring up the spanner and the foam combined to say, hey, somebody's probably trying to game the system here, because we don't know exactly how the FIA assesses things, or the secrecy is maybe meant to prevent people gaming the system, but that uncertainty may mean the teams might have to think of very fanciful ways, alongside many, many, many expensive lawyers, know a thing or two more about the FIA's own regulations, which is something they hope to address come 2030. Which is why Red Bull is fighting tooth and nail alongside with Ford to make sure that they know exactly why they are the benchmark. And you might be out there thinking, well, that's a nice thing for Ben Hodgkinson and his crew to know, that they made the best internal combustion engine on the grid. Yeah, that's all very well and good, and I'm pretty sure many engineers in that department would be giving themselves a pat on the back. But as a result, it means they get nothing. They are the fourth best team at the moment, yet they have the best engine, whilst the best team has the second best internal combustion engine. Can you see why that's a bit confusing? And it didn't feel right to Damon Hill and Mark Hughes either, and they spoke on the Undercut podcast. Hill believed some teams are carrying more power than they're revealing because they know they'll be penalised under the measurement system for showing too much. Mark Hughes went further and called the timing of Ferrari's Barcelona win suspicious, landing it as it did immediately after the ADO data lockdown period closed. Well, hang on, these guys are British, and Lewis won in a Ferrari. He's British. There's meant to be British bias here. Has the world gone topsy-turvy? Now, of course, we ladder folk and even the media's experienced pundits can't for sure prove teams are sandbagging their internal combustion engine output to game the assessment windows. But what we can actually deduce is that the incentive structure does exist. Red Bull seemingly played by the rules and were good boys to make sure that in their first year of competition they wouldn't draw any further controversy. I mean, the first year of the cost cap is an example, although the intentions were noble. According to Callum Nicholas's book, it was all about making sure that teams could actually subsidize their workers to have a good meal, which is the bones about the catering thing. But yeah, all the other teams, I think Mercedes and Ferrari plainly, did find a way to make some jiggery-pokery happen. Because we have a situation that this team, who are not the best in the front-running pack, get nothing, whilst Mercedes, who have won all but one race so far this year, gets at least a little something. And we've all been paying attention to how keen Toto Wolff has been about the implementation of the ADUO. A little bit too keen, if you ask me. And Laurent Nekkies, the Red Bull team principal, was careful about this too. Whilst they accept that the scheme is a thing and that it does have good intentions, he did very much quibble about the reasons why they actually came to the findings the FIA actually did, in that they can't find Red Bull a single measurement that would even justify why they would be the benchmark. All they can do right now is trust that the FIA knows what it's doing and that maybe come the next ADUO checkpoint this year, and then I think another two times after that, they might not be the benchmarks anymore, Mercedes. Well, Wolff's public stance on the whole thing after Barcelona was quite telling. He agreed with Binotto that the measurement was straightforward and said that it's quite easy to analyse because you can see how much grunt you have from the ICE. Then he admitted that being behind on pure engine power is a challenge for us. That's Mercedes conceding their combustion engine trails Red Bulls while simultaneously leading every other performance metric in the sport. Yeah, make no mistake, Toto Wolff is very much the most influential political force in the world, and if he says that Red Bull is the benchmark, then he is going to make sure they are seen as the benchmark by all concerned, as well as collecting development concessions for the privilege. And the FIA's defence is awkwardly useful as well. Their single-seater director Nicholas Tombassis explained that the governing body had discussed a more complicated model for the scheme. You know, including turbo pressures, diameters. It would take in a lot more parameters that could maybe produce a more complete assessment as to who exactly is the benchmark. But do you want to know exactly what happened? The power unit manufacturers took a look at all that and decided that, nah, that's too complex, we want something a bit simpler. So you might want to blame the FIA for this one entirely, but you've really got to look to the manufacturers as well. They wanted things to remain a little bit more discreet. But yeah, that's all very well and good. We've got what we got right now, and Audi's trying to make the most of it. And we've really got to look at what happened around the Barcelona track. And I know that many of you might get the spanners of speculations out for yourself and say, well, Audi probably did a low-fuel run with Paul Aaron, and that's why they were so fast. We don't know that for sure. So equally, you can easily interpret what Paul Aaron was doing in giving the brand new engine of Audi's a little bit of a spin to see where it lays. While every other team argued about whether ADUO was fair or not, Audi just got on with the job and got to work. And whilst the constructor standings would suggest this car is not all that hot, this car is faster than the 2 points would suggest. Without ever having tested the R26 on track, he finished under a second off Russell's benchmark time and only a tenth behind the current F2 champion Leo Fornaroli in the McLaren. This rekindling for me the chatter around Monaco practice that Audi could potentially give McLaren a little bit of the collie wobbles. And Binotto noticed this too, saying that Aaron was immediately fast. And remember, Aaron was driving the car with the upgraded engine that nobody had noticed yet, one focused around drivability rather than headline power, at least according to the Motorsport Report. Audi doesn't really need to worry about adding more power to its engine, because when you actually look at the top speed traps and the Speedmaster results, Gabriel Bortoleto around the Circuit de Catalunya was the fastest, recording a 360 km/h speed trap, only 12 km/h shorter than F1's overall speed record that Valtteri Bottas set in Mexico in 2016. And as has become very clear with other teams, including Red Bull's Max Verstappen, drivability is a really important thing to consider, and it might actually explain why Paul Aaron was just simply on it from the get-go. This the first time he drove the R26 in anger, having probably been more used to previous Alpines or maybe the A526 in the simulator. Drivability could make the difference between a driver who is completely new to the working environment of that team from struggling, or just going straight into the car and just doing the job, being less than a second behind George Russell, because the car did what he expected it to do. And that is something really important this year, because one headline that we've had time and time again, especially the beginning portion of the season, was that the car was doing things that the driver did not ask for it to do, such as, I don't know, overtaking cars when they didn't want to overtake cars, or going into corners and then completely killing off the power, you know, the computer saying no and all that. It seems like maybe the Audi system has refined itself. Then in FP2, with the regular drivers back in the car, Bortoletto was 8th, comfortably ahead of the second Red Bull, as well as the Haases and Williams and Alpines, and Hülkenberg made Q3 for the first time. They are definitely midfield contenders now, yet the points still put them only a point ahead of Aston Martin, who are definitely not midfield contenders. Again, reliability, I think, as well as execution and truly ridiculous bad luck, have made things a little bit more muddy for the team, because it's been an absolute rarity to see both Audis actually make the start grid, and you either have both of them having to retire, or one car having to retire, one car starting from the pit lane. Yeah, there have been moments when they haven't really executed properly and being able to get the most out of the midfield situation, and their race starts at the early part of the year. Whilst Ferraris were electric, Audis were not. And then in terms of bad luck and penalties, oh my goodness. I mean, I only have to look at what was going on with Hülkenberg, what should have been probably a sure for sure P8 around the Circuit de Catalunya, became a DNF after one singular bit of gravel clipped the emergency shutdown pull on the car, and then it just completely rolled to a stop, and then they had to go into the pit lane. And I'm pretty sure all the engineers around the Audi garage were just stunned into silence for 5 seconds, whilst myself and many other Audi fans out there, type in the comments if you agreed with me, were just shouting, "Oh, come on!" I don't think the car's the problem here, because Binotto did make a little suggestion a while ago, saying that Audi, in theory, has the 4th best chassis, based on some of the upgrades they have made to the car. And in some circles, I would say that's more believable than Adrian Newey claiming Aston had the 5th best chassis, that's for sure. So ultimately, I think it's the maturity of the project which is the issue. Even though they are still Sauber, who have been around Formula 1 for 30 years, Audi is very much running the show this time, and I think the ADUO mechanism will help them out immensely. It's like, okay, span of time. Is the ADUO situation and how they've been able to improve the car simply down to good engineering and anticipating that, hey, this engine is definitely not going to be the benchmark, so we may as well just prepare for it ahead of time? Well, yeah, that's a fair assessment. Every manufacturer is developing continuously, and Audi's engineers in Neuburg would have been working on the next specification regardless of the FIA's timing, but here's what separates this from a standard pipeline upgrade. Binotto didn't only deploy an engine revision at Barcelona, but also proposed restructuring the entire ADUO system. He used the tool and diagnosed its design flaw in the same 72 hours. That combination of execution and strategic positioning does not come from a team principal who is new to the job. He has been through the school of hard knocks after having been a Ferrari team principal. For the majority of his career, he was very much working behind the scenes in the engine department of the red team, but it does give him plenty of experience in understanding the FIA's framework when it comes to engine upgrades, rule changes, what have you. I mean, yeah, of course, he didn't build the Audi engine from scratch. That began at the back end of 2022. Mattia didn't come in until the middle point of 2024, but he has been very busy hiring many people from his old Ferrari days. He does have plenty of friends in high places there, including hiring the likes of Ferrari's Wolf Zimmermann. And that Wolf Zimmermann was the same guy that transformed that Ferrari Pioneer of 2014 into the 2015 version, which could actually go for race wins, and then it went from there to being a very viable title contender in 17 and 18. And what I think helped Binotto also is that he knew that Audi would qualify for some concessions, at least one upgrade this year and then one the year after, but hey, there you go. He's going to get 2 in each respective years. Not too shabby. So, okay, you heard me talk about what he proposed, so allow me to fill you the details. He suggested replacing the current system's ICE-only measurement with something based on the Constructors' Championship standings, the same logic that already governs aerodynamic development under the ATR system. Mercedes leads every Constructors' metric, yet still qualifies for some engine development concessions because their combustion engine isn't as good as Red Bull's. Under Binotto's proposed model, standings would determine who gets development freedom full stop. The highest placed power unit manufacturer in the championship would get the least help, the lowest would get the most. The results would speak for themselves, rather than some half-hidden performance index. Now, I know that some of you may get the foams of doubt out and say, okay, the intent of this law is noble, but look where Audi are in the constructors right now. They are the lowest placed power unit manufacturer, bar Honda, because, well, at this point, they are very much going to be the least powerful Honda, so that's not exactly something to be surprised about. But either way, this proposal would be something that would benefit the likes of Binotto. And you would be right in that regard to be a little bit cynical. All I can say in retaliation to that is, well, that's politics for you. You act in self-preservation and benefiting your own team. It happens. I mean, look what Toto Wolff's been doing at the front end of the grid. We're defending the current system because he actually serves to benefit from it. Before that was fully confirmed, Wolff was extremely jittery. Him previously warning that the scheme should function as a protective mechanism for struggling manufacturers, not as a tool that reshuffles the competitive order at the front. The message was clear. Don't use this to interfere with the fight of the championship, which is the kind of thing you would say when you're winning and you don't want anyone else to leave you with something to worry about. And based on the present situation, Wolff is noticing Ferrari get ever closer, not only through traditional aerodynamic upgrades, but also a slight boost in engine power, which, coupled with their smaller turbo, could mean monstrous acceleration in comparison to the W17. And oh yes, better reliability as well, thanks to that steel alloy that they came up with Ferrari instead of aluminium, which allows their engine to run that little bit hotter. And the Mercedes right now, let's just say it cooks its batteries a lot more than would feel comfortable. If Ferrari do win at least one championship, it will simply be down to better reliability and consistency, currently, from Lewis Hamilton. But when you go back to comparing Binotto and Wolff, they are very much assessing the current system and giving their own assessments of the situation. And it's up to us to decide which interpretation is the cleanest and the fairest. In theory, the intentions were noble, but due to the fact that the FIA has kept things incredibly vague, albeit for its own reasons, it has meant that the fourth place constructor has the best engine, whilst the leading constructor has the not so good engine. So do you propose just going back to what Wolff said in that it should allow struggling teams to catch up, or do you just go for a similar system to the ATR, as in, hey, where you're placing the constructors means the kind of help you get will change accordingly? But I think all of that talk regarding the ADUO about which system is fairer and the stuff that Audi brought to Barcelona are only short-term moves within the project. Audi has been very clear about their long-term goals for 2030, but the 2028 version I think really applies here. The same week the Audi stealth upgrade story broke, the World Motorsport Council formally ratified the power unit changes for next year and the year after that. The current power split would eventually morph into a 60-40 split come 2028. More engine power from the combustion engine and less battery dependence. The fuel flow increase would be 5% next year and 13% in 2028, which, according to rough estimates, could see the cars become 4 seconds faster in that year than they are this year. Basically, it would mean that the cars would be around about the same speed as the 2025 cars. So those of you worrying that these cars would be slower for forever and a day, you need not worry. They will be getting quicker very quickly. And potentially, the driving stars of Alonso, Leclerc, and Norris, etc. would be restored and see some semblance back into reality again, with the combustion engine taking more charge and the electrical department becoming less of a big actor. And every single engine upgrade that comes from the ADUO will only serve to benefit Audi in the long term, because from multiple reports we've heard from Audi since they actually joined the grid at the end of 2025, they are not looking to this year at all. They wrapped up major development of this power unit to focus on 2027 to find out where they stood within the ADUO scheme. And Bortoleto said to the Brazilian publication UOL that they are going to be bringing things in gradually. So you could say that the Brazilian exposed their game plan without really anybody noticing. It's all going to be about what happens for 2027 and 2028. Audi very much dragging their feet in terms of major change for next year alone, focusing on what they thought of 2028 with Binotto's original plan of being contenders. What do I mean by contenders? I'm talking about for major points, you know, P6s, P5s consistently, as well as maybe a couple of cheeky podiums or maybe a shock win here or there. And that's the point of this whole story. I'm not saying that they have won this entire thing by just having the fastest engine in terms of top speed traps. I'm saying that Audi were the first to act out of any other team, faster than even Ferrari. Okay, it's only by a couple of weeks, but one Grand Prix distance worth of development is something that is really worth considering. Every single mile counts in 2026, and I'm pretty sure that Hulk and his side of the garage and Binotto were gutted for the fact that they couldn't get that extra time, or maybe the points validation, simply for the fact that a tiny bit of gravel hit a particular point. I mean, what are the odds of that happening? So for now, the best thing they can do is cash the ADUO tokens and be ready for when the power split rewards everything you've been developing, whilst the front end of the grid bickers amongst themselves about who was or was not hiding engine power, or who was not the benchmark. As a result, Audi could begin their development pipeline in Spain without anybody noticing until days after, because it was listed as a routine engine swap on a Friday document in Barcelona, which didn't really attract the hearts and minds of the media. Because again, it came around round 7, and it is very much a very formulaic pattern. And yes, of course, Audi may be susceptible to grid drops further on into the season, but that could be the same thing for pretty much every other team up and down the grid. Especially Norris's McLaren, let's be real, as well as Hadjar's Red Bull. You see, there comes a time in every regulation cycle where teams are able to distinguish themselves from other teams. You know, the teams who actually read the rulebook and knuckled themselves down to get the most out of it. And then there are the teams that basically complain the loudest to try and get what they wanted, or try and get some things changed or clarified or what have you. And what we've heard from Mercedes, as well as Ferrari, let's be real here, and Red Bull in a way too. Oh, and Stella from McLaren, he does say a lot of things. They're all talking about what they can gain from all of this, because one of the big stories, as of recently, is the whole diffuser gate scheme of Mercedes, and Ferrari putting in a bell to the FIA about maybe wanting to clarify that. Mercedes are getting very jittery about that, as well as the fact that reliability going into a potentially hot European summer could derail their championship campaign. You think 72 points ahead in the constructors from Ferrari is big? It really isn't. McLaren overturned an even bigger gap to Red Bull and became constructors champions. So it's not over yet for Ferrari at the very least. And for Hamilton, 41 points. If they have another DNF, Antonelli, could be down to 16 in Austria. Who knows if Hamilton gets another win. And in the case for Russell, if he wins an Antonelli DNF, it's down to 25 the gap. It could easily come back on again due to the fact that, hey, the Mercedes engine and the car is quick, but is it reliable? No, it is not. And that is something I've seen ever since the shakedown. That was something I considered, but nobody batted an eyelid thanks to the efforts of Mercedes through the winter into just asserting their dominance as yes, I made the best car. I've got Kimi Antonelli. I've got George in the car. He's going to prove himself this year. Kimi's absolutely great. I'm glad I put him in the car. Well done, Kimi. You know, yes, all that stuff, all that bluster, all of those media headlines, just making all of the other teams give up. Well, they haven't given up, have they, Toto? Because Mattia Binotto filed his first ADUO claim inside 7 months of the regulation landing. Ferrari needed 2 more weeks for theirs. And whilst Audi are not romping off with midfield glory this year, that's not what they're after. This year for them is a burner year, and if they're ninth, well, I mean, it's the same placement they had as Sauber last year, so they haven't really gotten worse in the grand scheme of things, so do keep an eye on these guys. They could really surprise many folks, at least the likes of Haas, or maybe Racing Bulls and Alpine if they really kick things on. You should also keep an eye on this video right here, which I know, as well as YouTube, could be your bag after this video. I'll just go and freshen myself up and, dunk my head in some cold water, and I'll be right with you.